Okay, and then we're rolling on audio, so turn this off, turn this into... And then we'll just get after it. All right, everybody, we're out here again doing another Trail Talk interview. Today we got the man himself, Rich Klein, trail hero. We're going to run Arrowhead Canyon in his buggy. And as usual, we're going to talk about his car, how he got into this, and then the broader off-road community and how UTVs are affecting it for better or worse. But let's get after it. So,
cool. Arrowhead's a tent-rated trail. So one of the original trails on the mountain. When I first moved here 10 years ago, you know, there was probably 12 or 13 trails on the mountain. And then over the course of the last 10 years, we've built over 63 trails here as a community, you know, whether it be the side-by-side guys or the jeepers or the buggy guys building trails out here. So pretty cool.
Yep. And just reminders, everybody, if you're listening to the audio of this, this is recorded in car. So it's going to, things that happen on the trail, if you can't see it, if you wonder why there's a pause, it's probably because we're going up an obstacle, doing something a little more crazy. But so you moved here, we were talking a little earlier, you moved here about 10 years ago, you said?
Yeah, 2014. Okay. I actually went to high school in Cedar City, and we'd come down and frequent the Hurricane Sand Dunes before there was a lake, you know?
Okay, so that was a dune, like empty dunes before there was a lake there, a reservoir?
Yep.
That's kind of crazy. And then, like you say, you just start coming down here, just love the area, couldn't get enough of it?
I you know, I had a chance to move really anywhere in the world because of the type of work that I was in, being on a rotational schedule in the oil field. And I knew the area was great because I had lived in the area before. So... I moved down here and decided to, you know, start my family here, and it's been the best thing ever for my family and I. And, you know, it's the off-roading thing was, I mean, there was just like a couple of trails. I was here, I actually was on the mountain at the original, when Milt basically built the first trail on the mountain called Milt's Mile. And ever since then, you know, there'd been locals that come down here and open up a new canyon. This one that we're on, Arrowhead, is originally built by, I think it's Ole Broadstreet and Rob Plandro and Kelly and a couple of the other guys from Salt Lake area. And old clapped out Toyotas, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. So actually that's kind of an interesting question, because you said you started down here in the dunes and the lake. What was your like first off-road vehicle that you would claim as an off-road vehicle? Because my first off-road vehicle was a 96 Taurus. They shouldn't have gone where I took it. But my first... go ahead.
Yeah, I had a Dodge D50 that was like my high school rig. I earned enough money through paper route to buy it when paper routes were still a thing. And, you know, I eventually put one tons underneath it and did things with it I shouldn't have done, and then eventually sold it and, you know, moved on to bigger, better vehicles. But
gotcha. Did you have that in the dunes, or were you just coming down to the dunes for funsies? Or?
Yeah, it was just the dunes. Like, nobody really did rock crawling. We drove around the rocks back then.
That's interesting. So
this first obstacle here is kind of the gatekeeper to Arrowhead. It's huge. You have to climb the tire marks far on the left. You have to climb your tire all the way up the hill there to try to get it to seat right in this crack. If not, you fall in on the driver's side, you break axles and whatnot.
Oh, really?
So you'll see I'm going to climb pretty high with the driver's side.
Yeah.
And
yeah, just to keep that bite on that side.
Yeah. And then the rear has to also kind of climb, or else it falls off and creates a mess as well.
Yeah.
Well, so, guys without – well, we have rear steer, too. So, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Behind us, we have Logan with West Desert Wheeler on YouTube, and he's driving a rear steer car. And then behind him is Braxton Coleman, who's a 17-year-old, I think, 2 or 3-time national champion. He doesn't have rear steer. So, it's going to be interesting to see him kind of go up some of these. And but we can actually – the nice thing about having Roos here is we can turn around on the trail.
There's no way my Razor would do that at all.
And see people drive up.
Yeah. That is an impressive turn. That's like, what, 14 feet outside to outside maybe?
Yeah, and we weren't trying to get, you know, a good turning radius. We're just casually turning around, yeah. So you see how high Braxton's tire's got to be.
Yeah. Is that higher than what you took it? Because he obviously can't correct with the rear axle, so he's got to basically push it a little further to follow.
Right, a little compensation.
Right on. Well, that's awesome, man. So these portal cars, just even anybody, just kind of, it's just crazy to me. I love seeing the, like, some old dude in his garage or whatever just thinking, like, I can do this and just put something together that's just so capable. And, like, staring at this stuff, if you're just coming off the street, you're like, yeah, well, I have no idea why there's tire marks up there. How did that even happen? Kind of thing.
Well, I think that part of it is, you know, we want to drive more and more capable, you know, obstacles and you know, do more difficult trails. But at the end of the day, the technology isn't always there, and we gotta piece it together and go back to the garage and build something new. And that's why, you know, these portals, they come from a Hummer, a Humvee, you know, the original Humvee, that are made for IFS and IRS, independent suspension. And so putting them on a straight axle, creating your own custom parts to make them work that's part of the aftermarket industry. That's what makes it so great.
Yeah. What's the, from the buggy scene? Cause you've got all three of the big off-road rigs. You've got a Jeep, you got a buggy, you got a Razor. In the buggy side of things, what do you think is the most, like the biggest technological click or advancement that has happened in the last 5 years? Cause I don't know. I don't follow it probably as closely as you do, but I mean, even growing up 10, 15 years ago, hydro assist, hydro steer, that was the thing. I'm just curious what you think is the biggest advancement that they've had in these kind of cars.
Honestly, it's understanding the vehicle dynamics and the fact that we need to be roughly 60% front bias. So we're going to take a slight extra credit line because the other original line isn't that fun. So, and we're actually waiting on Braxton to come up. He's trying to ledge. There he is. But I'd say just understanding vehicle dynamics and the fact that we need 60% front bias. The portals are a big game changer. All the steering is getting better and better and more refined, but, you know, having the knowledge base of knowing what we need is a huge deal. And I feel like the side-by-side community, as they are building capable vehicles, if not just something to go fast, will also start to push those limits as well.
Yeah, they for sure will. What do you feel about, I mean, obviously this is a, yeehaw.
I wasn't going to warn you for that.
That was good. I like that. that was awesome. But I was going to say, obviously this is a straight rock buggy, but you see a lot of things in like the AOH type of stuff, the 4400 cars, you see a lot of entry of IFS type of stuff. Again, in the rocks like this, it's obviously, I don't know how well it would hold up, if at all, in these tight things, but do you see that as ever getting to a point where, you know, they build beefy enough A-arms and stuff to come in here? Or do you see a reason for that? I mean,
there's two different reasons why you have the type of suspension that you do.
Mm-hmm.
IFS is built specifically for speed,
right,
and comfort, which creates more speed. So when you look at, you know, what straight axles are for, you know, you need kind of more like unsprung weight and weight in very specific spots, or else it doesn't quite work the way you want it to.
Yeah, that goes back to 60% front distribution you were talking about and things like that.
Yeah. So we are getting ready for a huge drop.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Yeah. So the way this works is I've got to remember. I don't remember how to do this.
I love hearing that. Are we going to be on throttle to try and pull the front out, or will it stick?
No, it should be. It should stick.
Okay.
Bring the rear around, and then once we come down this, we'll actually bring the rear back around. That was the first one to open up this line back in the day.
That's wild. For everybody, audio-only podcast, please go watch this video and see what we just did. That's bananas. That's so cool. So
it's a lot of fun. It's fun to do the more extreme things. I put it in third gear to not have the vehicle push through the braking, then use cutting brakes to get down and rear steer to kind of navigate that. It's a big drop. Actually, you know, we could probably turn around and show it on the GoPro here.
Yep, we'll adjust this up for sure. Logan comes down. But the reason I ask about technologies is I feel like personally side-by-sides have kind of, I don't know if they've just reached the stage of it, of where they have this like a lot of like growth every year, like new things coming out, and it seems like the technology is just pushing. And the reason I brought up IFS is, like I say, King of Hammers stuff, where you have cars like Lauren Healy's and things like that that are just mobbing through things like that. And it's different than this, for sure.
It is. The vehicles have a different capability, right? They're faster,
for sure,
but they're not more capable. It's not like the vehicle can do harder terrain. The faster you go, the more you compromise what kind of hard terrain you can do.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, when you get into these very, very fast vehicles like Lauren Healy's or Shannon Campbell's IFS vehicles, you can't go rock crawling like these do. And so, to be honest, I'm actually working on a project right now with Kawasaki. And that is to be able to – oh, I don't have my locker on.
I was going to say, we're sliding a little bit.
I might have to reposition. Oh, there it is.
Some bite.
You know, we're going to actually straight axle. That's not supposed to feel that way.
Yeah, this feels a little light on my side, bud. That suck down winch is
game changer.
Right?
So that's the same technology that we've already figured out in these vehicles that we're going to add to a side-by-side, right? We're going to put a winch on the front that actually takes care of how the front end on an IFS vehicle unloads and loads. So the problem is when you start to get light in the front of a side-by-side, the A-arms kind of drop out, and your width actually gets narrower, right? Well, that's literally the worst thing that could happen when you're in a rock crawling trail. And so we're going to create a winch system that actually attaches to both knuckles systems, and suck that suspension up. And you can do one side or the other, but it's something that we're excited about. The other thing we're going to do is in this vehicle, I can go what we call front dig or rear dig. Mm-hmm. So it's front only or rear only.
Yep.
And in the process of that, that helps squat the vehicle, lower the center of gravity in side hill situations, and then it also allows for better turning. Well, side-by-sides don't have that ability, right?
No, not currently.
We are putting a transfer case into a side-by-side so that I have front and rear dig.
That's pretty cool, man.
And then the last part is we're adding a straight axle in the back, and the whole thing will be on portals with full hydraulic steering, front and rear.
That's cool. And that's what I was talking about. Like, I feel like side-by-sides are at a point where, like, they can make those big jumps. Like, those things are still, you know, new to that world. Whereas here, it's like, I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, these rear steer buggies are like you see in a Trailbreaker, man. Like, these are insanely capable. Like, you'd have no idea that something could look at a rock face like these and just be like, yeah, I'm just going to hit that, you know?
Well, that's kind of the point in Trailbreaker, and also the point in our side-by-side shootout is that we're pushing the technology. And a lot of times, like the last 2 years, we do the side-by-side shootout, people came with the same technology, the same crappy portal boxes that we're breaking and you know, it doesn't help the situation. The same slow steering that isn't very strong. And yep. So, we're going to kind of change up the game with the side-by-side industry a little bit and build a vehicle that can, that is a little bit more capable in the rocks, which most of the side-by-side stuff right now has been built specifically on being capable for speed.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how they're oriented from the get-go.
Right. So on this, we have to kind of climb really high with the driver's side again.
Yes, sir.
And then let the rear drop into the driver's side as well, and hopefully have the rear climb.
Looks like it's biting.
It's biting. This is a trail that would be super fun in a side-by-side, and there's only maybe a couple guys like Braden and Rob Christensen.
Yeah.
You know, those guys that are really pushing the sport, there's a couple that, you know, are in our side-by-side shootout that are great for that. But overall, you know, there's only maybe four or five guys that are really pushing hard to do harder trails.
I was going
to
say, there's only a handful of cars I know of in the side-by-side side of things that could even come to this canyon and have a prayer of thinking about it, you know? And like you said, that's really cool what you're working on with Kawasaki, because I feel like a lot of times, even with the stuff that's going on with Rob's car, with Braden's car, I feel like for a side-by-side to get into this type of stuff, it's necessarily more of a general disregard for the
right.
car. It's still like you got to have a lot of throttle. You got to bounce some things. Whereas we've been 100% under control half a mile an hour the whole time up this without, you know, nary a question.
Yeah. Well, I just went to go take a drink and lost control of the rear for a second. But the nice thing is with rear steer, you can kind of put it back where you want it to be.
Yeah.
If Braxton did the same thing, he'd roll over.
So have a little reset,
a little bit
at least.
More difficult. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the sport's getting pushed with side by sides more and more, and their technology is going to increase, and those vehicles are going to become more capable. And I don't know if they'll ever get to trail breaker status, because those are very specifically built for that task. But I think that they could get to a point where they're extremely capable and able to do 9 and 10 rated trails very easily, maybe even 11 rated trails. So out here at Sand Hollow, typically, like the trail rating system, the way it was originally founded was at the very beginning, 90s, early 2000s, there was no buggies, and it was just people out here with Jeeps and the original side-by-side, like Willie's pickups or Willie's Jeeps, you know? And you get, like, the rating was, like, 1 to 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the biggest size tire you had was 35s. They were, you know, a DOT tire, which means they're for street use. And, they're full-bodied vehicles. Then, with the advent of buggies and more capabilities, not rear steer yet, you know, we had to open up the trail rating to 10 just because it made sense. And then now with all the tech that we have, you know, you're looking at, we have it open to 15. It's a 1 to 15 rating now. But 15 is where it stops. We're not going to keep going with technology. 15 is a trail that's never been accomplished before. And once it's been driven at least once, then it drops to a 14.
Okay, so the trail breaker is the 15 because it's incompletable at current state.
Yeah, and then once it gets driven, like this year, you know, Brett Dickey, 15-year-old kid at the time, won this event, and he called it Little Bill, and at that point, when he completed the course, it then became a 14.
Okay, and so is that trail rating system, that expansion, as far as I understand it, that's only Sand Hollow. Like Moab is still capped at like a 10. Is that correct? Or correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, every trail system has the ability to bump up like that.
Right.
You know, Moab has area BFE, which you can open up new trails and work with the property owners and stuff. So it's not like Moab in general can't exceed the 10 rated trails. But the traditional Moab trails that you know of, I think the hardest one being Pritchett Canyon.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be, I think that's rated a 9. And
yep.
And to be honest, if a full body Jeep is doing it without any body damage, I think a 9 is probably a little too steep. It should probably be rated an 8.
Okay. Well, and that's kind of one of the things I was trying to get to, is that it feels like outside of area BFE where they can make things like Black Flag and those trails, we're kind of constrained by realistically regulation now, because it's not like you can go out to Moab and cut a new trail or anything like that outside of that private property. So it's just kind of set is more what I'm saying. It is what it is at this point.
Yeah, it very much so. So this is always an interesting obstacle here, but you have to kind of wedge yourself in just right.
Let's say it didn't rear look as intimidating helps. As the other ones we've done, but
yeah, rear steer helps a lot. When I first moved here, that was one of the hardest obstacles on the mountain.
Really?
Yeah. But vehicle technology is a huge thing. You know, competition tires, the BFGs just stick to the rock. The rear steer helps even out the vehicle and pressure things the way you need it to, and it just really makes a difference.
That's awesome. Well, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, well, we're speaking about the Moab thing and you know, like the restrictions there. I'm curious in general what your opinion, I mean, obviously you're pretty open to it if you're working with Kawasaki, but what's your opinion on the influx of side-by-sides and the popularity of them coming into a sport that's been generally dominated by people that, you know, have put in a lot of time and care into, like, I need to build this thing to make it up this one obstacle. I'm going to go sit in my garage and tinker with whatever for, you know, 20 hours, design a part, mill it on a lathe. I mean, I grew up around that kind of stuff. And obviously now I drive a side-by-side, and it's the side-by-side capability out of the box is just wild in comparison to, like, picking up even a factory Jeep, even a Rubicon. I mean, I don't want to get any, I don't want to ruffle any feathers here, but I feel like pound for pound, dollar for dollar, off the showroom floor, if you say that the best off-road vehicle is anything other than some form of side-by-side, I genuinely think you're wrong.
Right out of the box, I agree.
Yeah.
And what we see is, like, so the sport has always been, the sport of rock crawling or the trail riding has always kind of been a cultural-based, generational sport, okay?
Yep.
So my grandfather did it, my dad did it, I do it, I want my grandkids to do it, that kind of thing. And
okay.
What you find is that a lot of times, the way I kind of put it is, there's a culture here that, you know, we know how to take care of the trails. We've been dealing with land use issues for a long time. And so people are very passionate about needing to keep those trails open. And when you see in the past, what's worked with our sport is when you see people that don't do what they should land use wise. No, that's not supposed to happen. Then our sport has been really good at shaming people into the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, nowadays I should say that it's not necessarily the right way to go about doing it, but there needs to be a level of education for people who are just getting into the sport that don't have that grandfather telling them, hey, it's not okay to just throw your trash out the window. This isn't your, you know, this isn't LA. It's not your trash can. And I don't see the people that are really in the sport, I don't see them giving any kind of difficulty to land use. They all understand what we need to do. It's, generally speaking, the people who are not accustomed to our way of life, right? And those are people that are generally new to the sport.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's got to be a level of education, and you got to rely on the main guys that run your sport. Like, but for rock crawling, it's, you know, me and Jesse Haynes and, you know, some of the land use guys, the Blue Ribbon Coalitions of the world,
yep,
to really kind of keep everyone in line. And when you get to the side-by-side industry, that's when you have to lean on your influencers and your ambassadors to really give a positive message. Hey, that isn't cool. We need to be better at that. And the worst part about that is that messaging, it's in and of itself, isn't cool. Like, nobody wants to be
the policeman.
Right. It's not why we get into it. But if we don't do it, it's why we'll lose it.
Yeah.
So.
Do you feel like, because this is all kind of a mental experiment for me. I'm trying to, like, put two and two together here. I personally kind of feel like I think there's two aspects to it. When you buy a Jeep, if you want to come do something like Sand Hollow, you are forced into an interaction with people who are already doing it because you have to have conversations about what am I capable of doing? What mods should I do?
Right.
And that build process sort of influences you into, like, you have to interact and rub shoulders with those already doing it.
Right.
And it
helps out a lot, but, you know, one thing that you really fall back on is the social aspect of this, right? We typically come out here and we talk, and that's what we're doing while we're wheeling, but, you know, when we get done with a trail or halfway through, we sit down and we eat lunch and we talk about mods and different things you could do to your vehicle. Well, this, you know, anything you do in off-road is no different, whether you're in a Jeep or a side-by-side. And the thing that I always kind of fall back on is that the off-road industry in and of itself right now is the biggest that it has ever been, right?
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. The bigger we are, the stronger we are. But we're still really fractured. You know, there's this, you know, thought amongst each community, whether you're side-by-side or Jeep, that the other guys aren't cool. You know, the Jeeps go too slow on the trail. The side-by-sides go too fast. It's a lot like the skier snowboarder thing of the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And to be honest, we're in buggies right now, and the buggy guys, myself included, felt the same thing that the side-by-side guys are now feeling. So it's one of those, this is a canyon we just came up right over here.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where you want to do you want to be together and inclusive, but every group inherently has their bad apples. And unfortunately, right. You know, each group gets judged entirety because of the few. And so that's where I feel like the side-by-side community is at right now, in that, you know, the Jeepers, they knock on the side-by-side guys for various reasons, and for the most part, the large majority, it's unwarranted. I come out here in a side-by-side and I wave to a couple Jeepers that know me but don't recognize that I'm in a side-by-side, don't recognize me. And they don't wave back, and they're not, you know, friendly. And then I pull up to them, and I'm, hey, dude, like, it's me. And, you know, not all side-by-side drivers are jerks. And really, it's, when I say a minority, it's maybe 2 or 3% of the side-by-side owners, right? But where
right.
I think that are maybe jerks, but where I think that the side-by-side guys get a bad rap is that these things are so available. You can walk in and buy it with a credit card. You don't have to custom build it. You don't have to be the guy in your garage, you know, tinkering. And so a lot of times you don't get or you get people in the sport that maybe they don't even own them. Maybe they're here locally, or they've traveled here and they're renting it.
Right.
And because they're still in a side-by-side, it gives side-by-side guys a bad rap. They just don't know the rules. They're not from the country. They don't know what we do. So I think that's a tough part, you know, and the Jeep industry sees it as well with all the rental Jeeps and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a level of education, and the onus of that is on the rental companies and the manufacturers to produce messaging that helps. So it's not just reliant on the culture itself, because what is happening is the culture itself is maybe even driving people away or creating division when we all really need to be strong. That's one reason why at Trail Hero we have side-by-sides. I want people to feel included. I want it to feel like, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of off-road rig you have. You're here. That's all that matters. You know, if we don't use the land, we lose it. We have to use it responsibly. But if we don't use it, there's no economic impact for the area, and there's no reason for the city or the state to go, you know what, it should be housing development instead. So it's important that we use it. We use it responsibly.
I agree. I'm right there with you in that, like, I do feel like there needs to be a lot of self-policing. I don't think it's the majority of any group that is really ruining it, but I feel like side-by-sides, for whatever reason, I can't say for whatever reason, it is warranted to some degree, right? But they are definitely the target of, like, well, you guys are getting trails shut down now. But in my own experience, I've seen even just this year two instances of things that were bad trail use of the, I don't know if how far I want to go to this, but filling in concrete on trails, I understand what you're,
bullshit.
Well, I can understand the idea behind it, right?
Right. Yeah.
But also, like, it was interesting to see that post. Like, for anybody that doesn't know, there's a trail called the Maze, and then on Milt's Mile as well, and somebody went in and filled in some holes with concrete in a probably misguided effort to make the trails, repair the trails. The amount of hate that was immediately saying, this has to be a side-by-side person, was just, I felt like it was crazy. And it turns out that wasn't the case at all.
It was a jeeper.
Right.
And so that's the tough part is, like, you have to hold judgment. You can't be firing away when you don't know any better. We, in a day of misinformation and fake news, you see all the time, you know, the last thing you want to do is be responsible for pointing a finger at a whole community when it was, in fact, your community that did it instead. And I think our industry and our community here in Southern Utah figured that out really quick. And once they realized it was a, you know, a jeeper, it changed the tune. You know, people stopped immediately and holy shit, you know, it's not what we thought it was. And, you know, it's, I hate to harp on it, but it's important. You know, that guy, he knows what he did was wrong. However, you know, he still thinks that he did the right thing for the right reason. And that is because depending on the land you're on, some government agencies are okay with that. I don't know if you know this, but when you're on Forest Service land is totally differently managed than BLM. So all this concrete work was done on BLM land. BLM says, don't touch it. Leave it natural. If the trail gets harder, it is what it is. Forest Service, which most jeepers are used to working on Forest Service land, the local clubs can make trail upgrades, or not upgrades, but fixes to the trail as long as the trail rating remains the same.
Okay.
And so his argument was, well, some people got in there and that were incapable and ended up burning off tires and you know, creating these holes in the rock, and that those holes needed to be filled. I don't agree with that. To be honest, if you are incapable of doing it, upgrade your equipment or don't do it. Yep. Right? Or
there's bypasses.
There's for here. There's bypasses. Other places there isn't. Upgrade your equipment or don't go, or get proper recovery gear and work your way through it. But don't go in and fill holes and change the trail. I feel that that is detrimental to our existence. You know, it's unjustifiable. So he felt it was justified. He now knows the community doesn't agree with him, and it is what it is. And by the way, BLM, who manages land, doesn't agree with him either. And, you know, there is repercussions that he has based on that. But it was really crappy that, you know, that the community had to deal with that in the first place, right?
Right.
This wasn't a concerted group effort to improve a trail. No. This was a lone person who came out midweek when there's very few people here, and he did it on his own, knowing that it would create rifts. Like, he knew when he did that it would create a problem. And the odd thing is, he got caught for the first one, which was actually the second hole that he built, or that he filled in on the Maze. He got caught for the Maze first. He had done Milt's Mile before that. When he got caught for the Maze, nobody brought it up. Nobody released his name publicly. But we all told him, like, obviously as a community, this isn't acceptable. He didn't have the mindset to go, hey, any of the other things that I've done on the mountain by myself, I should go return those to normal. And so what was done on Milk's Mile had actually been done for a year, and just nobody noticed it because there was sand over the top of it.
Okay.
Once the concrete was exposed, which only takes a simple rainstorm,
yeah,
then people are sitting there going, what the hell's going on? And that obviously doesn't work. So he should have taken the mindset like, holy crap, I screwed up. Sorry. Go fix.
Hey, by the way, I have this one. I'm going to go fix it. Do you want to come help me fix it? What, you know, whatever.
And like I said, you know, every community has its bad apple. It's 2 or 3%. And the way you fix that is by shaming them and telling them, like, slap them on the hand. Hey, this isn't acceptable. Fine them. I don't think it warranted jail time, but there needed to be some repercussions there.
Well, and like you say, every community has those bad apples. In the same time frame, I mean, there's pictures of the dude that drove the side-by-sides on top of the Flintstone house, and it's the same thing. I mean, that's a little less permanent, but it's still the same. Like, the community needs to police that. I will say, from my perspective, I find that people react to honey better than they react to vinegar. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have those conversations and say, and absolutely say, you cannot be doing this.
Right.
But I'm curious what we could do to be more carrot than stick. And from the side-by-side side of things, or the UTV side of things, I'm toying with the idea of, like, maybe we should find a way to do a trail ride where you can't come unless you bring somebody that you know is, like, brand new to the side-by-side world.
Right.
Or that's, like, the ticket to entry is, like, you have to be able to, like, we're going out to educate people, like, we can all ride together with the people that know how to do this as much as we want, but unless there's an outreach from the community to people that, like you say, might have just walked into a Polaris dealership or whatever one day and were like, this is neat. Unless we can get to them and say, like, hey, you just come with us and show them how it's done. I don't know of a better outreach plan from the side-by-side side of things. And I'm curious, not necessarily from Jeepers to other Jeepers, but, like, what do you think is a, like, proactive step that the Jeep guys or the buggy guys could take to kind of also bridge that gap and that knowledge gap if they see a side-by-side person that, like, looks like they're struggling? Or I guess it's very easy to say we need to police our own, we need to call out bad actors, but what's a proactive step from some of the more traditional off-road company or people that could do something?
Yeah. So, you know, you have to rely on your influencers because that's what they do, right, and your ambassadors. But, again, it's that honey versus vinegar thought. Have a friendly, proactive conversation with somebody. Don't blow up on someone, hey, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that's going to put someone on the defensive. I think you need to come up and go, hey, man, how's it going? Hope things are going well. Just to let you know, this isn't necessarily, like, okay. You can't be doing this, you know, and I'm not your mom. I'm not here to tell you what you can and can't do, but just to let you know, there's a large swath of people in this industry. They get basically screwed every time someone like yourself does an action like this. And as long as, like, you come up with that kind of conversation, typically people are like, oh, hey, I didn't know. You know, it's very, very rare that you get somebody that says, you know, F you, I'm going to do what I want. And those are the bad apples. You're not going to change their mind.
Yeah.
You go ahead and film them doing what they're doing, blast them online, and let the industry handle it, because that's when we police our own. But, you know, having that initial conversation positively, I think is a good thing for the sport and a good thing for people. And it doesn't put people on the defensive right away, you know?
Right.
So it's definitely one of those things that we could do better at, because traditionally the Jeepers, it's always put everyone on blast. You know, you should know better, but now we're dealing with an industry that, you know, and a group of people that most of them do, but there's few that don't. And instead of putting them on blast and pushing them out of the sport, it's a great opportunity to educate them, get them on step with what we're doing, and maybe that person can have a proactive, positive conversation with somebody when they experience the same injustice.
Yeah. I think that's really important. And like I say, you have an influx of people coming into the sport through side by sides. You can look at it as a, you know, a bane to our existence, to the off-road existence. You can look at it as a blight on the community, or you can look at it as, hey, we have this new influx of people that could help us with our efforts in, you know, open access and land preservation. And I think that missing that part of it and missing being able to see that is a real, it's a miss from the off-road community. But anyways, man, I'm super stoked that we got to do this. I'm really excited we got to come up this canyon. Thanks for putting me up against the wall a couple times.
That's part of it. You know that you can't really see it, but from the camera view, but the panels here, they're made out of Lexan and they're broken and battered and smashed. And these are called the party panels, you know, and the idea is that they're here to party. We build the vehicle for battle. And then we have the show panels where, you know, things are a little bit nicer, but you know, we built the car to be the most capable vehicle on the planet, you know, and there's more capable vehicles than this and far more capable drivers. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's what we do, right? It's part of the fun that we have. And if you have the show body on it and you ruin it, like a nice wrap or something, man, that ruins the day. So it's nice to have something a little easier.
Right on. Well, thanks for the conversation, man. I appreciate your insight. We'll catch you guys next time.
Cool.
Thanks, man. That was awesome.